Was it you who coined the term free period?
No. What does that mean?
I don't know where I read that, but like it's, you know, this period of time is when you don't have your period anymore. So I heard it called a free period. Hey, you guys, this is The Mean Podcast, and I'm your host, Kristen Filipkowski. The Mean Podcast is where I talk to creative, curious, and ambitious women who are diving headfirst into the second half of their lives. Turning 50 doesn't mean it's time to fade into the background. It means we know what we're doing, and we're not afraid to do it. Hello, everyone. As always, I hope you are all safe and hanging in there. I turned 52 this week, and I thought I would be celebrating in quarantine with maybe a Zoom call or two, but some of our closest friends stopped by to drop off some wine, and we ended up hanging out on our deck for a little while, and I'm not sure if we were quite 6 feet apart, and it felt a little bit naughty, but I have to say, I think I might be ready to strike up one of those quarantine pods I've been reading about, where you all have a small group of close friends who you trust and you hang out exclusively. It's like less than 10 people and it's supposed to be quite safe. I think there was an article in Slate just today and I've read other articles as well. So I think I might be ready for something like that. It felt really good to hang out with people in person, I have to say. And I think I could use more of that in my life. On the show this week, we are talking about something near and dear to my heart, menopause. I know, super sexy, right? I know, not a sexy topic, but it's something that is just, there's so much misunderstanding. There's so much downright false information out there. I think it's such an important topic, and I'm really excited about this episode. I interview Dr. Leslie Meserve, who is the founder of CurieMD, which offers telemedicine for women navigating perimenopause and menopause. Dr. Meserve is a certified menopause specialist with a certification from the North American Menopause Society. And that's actually a certification that not as many doctors have as you might think. Dr. Meserve in the interview told me that while there are 36 million women experiencing perimenopause and menopause symptoms right now in the United States, there are only 3,000 certified menopause practitioners. This is one of many shocking statistics that she shares in the interview. One other one was that another study found that 3/4 of OBGYN residents had limited to no knowledge of menopause. I mean, that's just insane. So thank heavens for CurieMD and Dr. Meserve. She is trying to get the truth out there about hormone replacement therapy. Besides helping with hot flashes and sleep, HRT actually has shown in studies to have many benefits, including lowering the risk of Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, and osteoporosis, just to name a few. So, without further ado, I give you my interview with Dr. Leslie Meserve, founder of CurieMD. I'm so excited to have today on the podcast Dr. Leslie Meserve, who is the founder of CurieMD, which is an online service for, it's specifically menopausal women. Is that correct?
Yeah, perimenopausal and menopausal women. So basically women in their 40s and 50s.
Great. And so welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I was very excited to hear about your service because, as you know, I'm menopausal and I was a patient last week. So I'm really excited to tell everybody about that. But before we get into that, we're in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. It's sort of, fingers crossed, maybe waning. It's very confusing out there, but I'd just like to let everybody know, where are you? What's your shelter in place situation? How is everything going for you?
Yeah. So I'm in Newport Beach, California, and we are, our shelter, some of our shelter in place stay at home orders are being lifted right now. I haven't spent a lot of time on the health department websites learning exactly what each organization, which each type of business has to, which rules they have to comply with. But I am so excited for us to be able to start returning to some more normal living over the next few weeks. So, but as of now, you know, the thing that affects, I think, so many of us, you and me and many other women and other parents in general, is just that the schools still aren't going to open and we don't know when that's going to happen. And so, you know, the frustration, the lack of certainty in that regard is extremely bothersome, but I, at this point, I'm just trying to take it day by day, week by week, and make sure that I try to just look at the positive sides of things. The silver lining is that I've gotten to spend more time with my teenagers than ever before. So not all of it's been great, but most of it has been really fun to just be able to be here at funny times during the day and eat lunch with them and, you know, help them record their speech for speech class and just different things like that. So, you know, they're trying to look at the silver lining in all of this too.
Yeah. I've noticed that. I also have a 19-year-old and, you know, it's been difficult because at 19, you're like, what? I can't hang out with my friends. That does not compute, you know, but at the same time, it's been really interesting. I think it's actually built up our relationship a little bit. It's been kind of good in a lot of ways. So yeah, there's definitely silver linings here and there.
Yes. And, you know, having all four of us, I have two children and a husband, and having all four of us home for dinners in the evenings without driving frantically to dance class and Krav Maga and rowing and all of their different activities, you know, that part has been very lovely. And I think we just have to make sure that whatever parts of this we actually enjoy, we try to keep as much as possible in the future. I mean, I know for me that I am going to seriously look at the kids' activities and ask them to pare those down and really choose the ones that they find, you know, the most beneficial and the most enjoyable. And let's stick with, you know, half of those to try to make sure that we have more downtime and more family time.
That is such a good point. I feel exactly the same way. I hadn't really thought about examining the schedule and paring things down, but now that you say that, I think that is such a great idea because same here, the dinners at home have been so nice. It's been, and it used to be so rare.
Yes.
So yeah, that's so great. So you, as I mentioned, founded a company called CurieMD, and it's a service for women who are navigating perimenopause and menopause, and it's a remote service. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. We're all online. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a brick and mortar practice also, but we had started this telemedicine practice. Well, we founded it a year ago and really started opening up the clinic, the online clinic, in January. And at the beginning, you know, patients and other physicians were sort of hesitant about the telemedicine idea. But now that COVID has happened, there is no longer a concern about the benefits, the risks and benefits of telemedicine. Everyone just accepts that, you know, this is a way to conveniently meet with a practitioner and get answers that you need. Of course, it doesn't serve the needs of a patient who needs to have a physical exam as part of their visit. But if it's just a talk visit, if it's a cognitive visit where it's discussing different options, different treatment options, and it doesn't require a physical exam, this is absolutely going to be a feature, a service that persists past COVID.
Right. That's very interesting. I wonder if there are probably a lot of different industries where this is going to continue to happen. Mm-hmm. Like people are going to realize it's actually a benefit. That's interesting. So you still operate, you're an internal medicine MD, correct?
Correct. I'm board certified in internal medicine. So I'm a primary care physician and I have an in-person wellness practice in Newport Beach. And then I have this telemedicine practice, CurieMD, which we're opening up to all residents of California in an attempt to be able to just reach a larger audience and make sure that we offer solutions for menopause to more women.
So exciting. I mean, as I mentioned, I had an appointment with you and it was really easy. And it was also very enlightening. Menopause is a very confusing topic, I find. It's just incredible how little we all know about it. And it's by no fault of our own. It seems like it's just been a sort of a taboo subject. Like nobody wants to talk about it. It's not very sexy or whatever. So I'm wondering, is this something that you think is changing? Are you part of the change? Or where do you think this is going as far as women knowing about it?
You know, we're taught what menarche is, the start of the period. We're taught about what happens during pregnancy. We're just not taught about what happens in menopause. You don't hear women speaking to their mothers and their friends nearly as often about what happens in menopause as you hear them talking about other health concerns. And, you know, you asked if I was going to be part of this change. I sure hope so. You know, it's a natural part of what happens to every single woman who lives long enough. And I just want us to all be able to share ideas. And I would like for every woman to be offered a chance to learn about the different treatment options and solutions for making sure that this transition in life is as smooth as possible. You know, I think women are often taught in a subtext that they should just grin and bear whatever is happening to them, especially when it has to do with their female parts. And I don't like that message. I don't think that's a strong message. I think that we should reject that. And so I want women to be able to learn about what they can do to optimize their health and be able to trust their bodies and listen to their bodies and work with advocates, physicians and nurse practitioners, other healthcare providers who can help them through this, what can be a very rocky time of life.
Yes, for sure. And how did you first become interested in menopause and think, oh, this is a need, a specific need out there?
Well, being a female physician, about 70% of my practice has always been female. And so I have watched many of my patients go through menopause and have had to learn on the fly how to take care of them. We're just not trained very well in our residency programs, our training programs on how to handle menopausal patients. You know, being an internist, I also have treated the repercussions of women who have not had the benefit of hormone therapy, meaning, you know, I am the one who picks up the pieces when they have an osteoporotic hip fracture, or they develop Alzheimer's, or they develop cardiovascular disease. And I've always been a fan of preventing anything that we can prevent so that women and men can live as long as they can, as well as they can. And so the more that I learned about what happens in menopause and the benefits of hormone therapy in particular, the more I realized that that's part of a prevention plan for women. Now, also in my early 40s, I developed hot flashes and night sweats. And so I had to learn this for myself. And I began my own journey through the healthcare system to find solutions for what I was experiencing. And I had a very hard time getting anyone to be able to help me get through what I was going through. Because as I said, you know, primary care physicians and even OBGYNs just don't have the benefit of a lot of training in what happens during menopause and perimenopause. In fact, there was a study done in 2013 in a journal by the North American Menopause Society where they surveyed residents. So these were trainees who were in their fourth year of training in OBGYN and obstetrics and gynecology. And 3 out of 4 of them stated that they had limited to no knowledge of menopause, even fresh. Yes, even right there in their training. And only 20% of them stated that their residency program had a formal menopause medicine curriculum. So 20% of our gynecologists, and these are supposed to be our physicians who are most well-trained in menopause, only 20% of them are given a formal curriculum. So it's no wonder I had a hard time finding anyone. So through my journey, I found a physician who helped me, and I also discovered the North American Menopause Society, which is an organization of healthcare clinicians and researchers who have banded together to make sure that we can have very strong research in the care of women going through menopause. And so it's through that organization that I became a certified menopause practitioner and was working in my in-person wellness practice and decided that I really wanted to be able to reach more women because I do feel there's such a need. So we launched CureMD, which is our digital on-demand menopause clinic that offers menopause care from anywhere. Actually, only in California right now. We do hope to expand to other states soon, but we're in California right now. And so we're trying to reach as many women in California who are interested.
I'm so grateful that you are in California because like I've mentioned a couple times now, I had my appointment with you and you prescribed hormone replacement, bioidentical hormone replacement. Mm-hmm. I already got it and then I've taken it for 3 days already.
How do you feel?
I feel good, but I do feel like my sleep is a little bit better. I still wake up. I'm not sleeping through the night, but I'll keep you posted. I would be so excited if that happened.
Oh my gosh.
I go to bed too early though is part of the problem. Also, I tend to go to bed with my 7-year-old, so that's kind of a problem. But I do feel like my sleep quality has been better actually. When I wake up, I feel rested. The past 2 days have not been tired during the day, which is a miracle.
Oh my gosh.
That seems different. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so bioidentical hormone replacement, any kind of hormone replacement, I feel like in the United States anyway, is fraught with a lot of like fear and questions and people don't trust it. And I mean, I think that might be changing, but why is it like this? I found just one other point is I found a lot of menopause communities on Instagram who are based in the UK and they are, it's different. They take it and it's not a problem. They think it's beneficial and there isn't all the fear and mistrust around it. So yeah, could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So in 2002, so there was a study that was one of the largest studies ever done in women's health. And so I'm grateful that at least we're getting more funding for studies of women's health. But this study was called the Women's Health Initiative. And it had quite a few flaws and really changed the face of women's health care in the United States for the past almost 20 years. And it's been to our detriment. So in 2002, the Women's Health Initiative released a press release, and it was incorrect. And the press release basically said, hormone therapy causes breast cancer. Hmm. And that is what has changed what women do in the United States for the past 20 years. What they failed to do was give us the nuances of that study. So actually in the group of the trial where women received estrogen only compared to a placebo, the women receiving estrogen had a lower risk of breast cancer. Now it was not statistically significant and didn't need to, it's not like we can say that estrogen prevents breast cancer, but it wasn't statistically significant. But if you look at it, there were, I think it was seven or eight fewer breast cancers out of 10,000 person years and the estrogen-only arm. In the arm of the trial where women received estrogen plus progestin, progestin is necessary if a woman has a uterus. In that arm of the trial, there were 38 breast cancers out of 10,000 person years of data. In the arm of the trial where they received placebo, a sugar pill, there were 30 breast cancers out of 10,000 person years. So there was a difference of 8 breast cancers. So
out of 10,000,
and it was not statistically significant. And that term statistically significant is important because that we really shouldn't be going to the public and saying there's a finding if it's not considered statistically significant, because without that being the case, it could be due to chance.
Right. That's the difference.
That's the difference. So this should never have been released. But it was, and the media got a hold of it and placed this fear in our brains. And as I've said before, we know that fear is an important part of survival. And so anytime we develop the fear of something, it lives very deep in our brains, in this kind of deep, dark recesses of our brains and the amygdala. And that's important for survival because we never want to forget that a certain red berry is dangerous. or that the lion is dangerous. You know, anything that's dangerous, or a person is dangerous. We don't want to forget that that thing, that entity is dangerous, because that's part of how we survive. So we do not forget fear. And so trying to extract this statement that X causes cancer is extremely hard to do because of that long living component of fear. And so that's what we're trying to backtrack right now. You know, and we don't want to say that hormone therapy is, you know, the end all be all and that every single person on the planet needs to be on it. But I believe that every woman should be given the choice and be given the full information. All we ever hear about is that one risk. We never hear, it's not promoted about what the benefits are. And for most women, the benefits are going to outweigh the risks, and they should be offered all of that information.
Yeah. And the benefits, from what I understand, don't just stop at, you know, stopping hot flashes and better sleep. And I've read things about muscle mass and even losing weight, like, or not gaining weight like you do when you hit menopause. So there's all of that. And you can let me know if I'm missing some, but then isn't there also associations with preventing complications later in life?
Yes. So let me start with short-term benefits. So the short-term benefits are the benefits to your quality of life. There was a study done in 1990 by Dr. Phil Sorrell, where he studied women before they started hormone therapy and after they started hormone therapy. The women who were having insomnia, 70% of them noted an improvement in their insomnia. 56% noted an improvement in their memory. 42% noted that they weren't worrying nearly as much. And 40% say that they were able to do tasks more effectively at work. So we know, and we know that hormone therapy is the absolute best treatment for hot flashes and night sweats. Now, the long-term benefits, which we, again, need to be, I think more women need to be educated about, are that estrogen therapy does help to maintain muscle mass. We do have evidence that it does help to prevent the redistribution of fat to the belly. And we know that, of course, no woman wants any belly fat, but it's also harmful. That belly fat is the most harmful kind of fat, because that's the kind that leads to metabolic syndrome and diabetes.
Right.
Hormone therapy, estrogen in particular, decreases the risk of diabetes. We know that it decreases when it started within the first 10 years of menopause and before age 60. We know that hormone therapy decreases the risk of heart disease, so atherosclerotic heart disease, by 50% and decreases all causes of mortality. We know for sure it prevents osteoporosis. Now, osteoporosis is not a sexy disease. No one gets super worked up about osteoporosis, but you have to remember that women who have a hip fracture, 25% of them die within a year. So believe it or not, hip fractures can be life-threatening, not only life-altering, but also life-threatening. And then we have four observational studies that show it decreases the risk of Alzheimer's by 24 to 65%, depending on which study you're looking at. Yes. Yep.
Wow. Wow. So I feel like menopause needs a really good PR person. I mean, not menopause, sorry. HRT needs a good PR person.
Right? Well, menopause needs a good PR person.
And menopause.
Yes. I mean, I would love if we could find a new name for menopause, because unfortunately there is this negative connotation, but I'd love for it to, and maybe you can help me come up with a spin on this, but where we're like, you know, awesome, we don't have to have our menstrual periods anymore. Life is going to be better. We're going to be stronger. We now have all this wisdom from what we've learned in the first 50 years of our life. The second half of our life is going to be better. So that is what I want women to feel in their bones.
That's what I'm trying to do here. I mean, honestly,
yes.
with Mean Magazine and this podcast.
Amen.
I mean, yeah. So let's continue doing it. I really feel strongly that way as well. And where did I read? Was it you who coined the term free period?
No. What does that mean?
I don't know where I read that, but like it's, you know, this period of time is when you don't have your period anymore. So I heard it called a free period, which is kind of cool.
Cute. I like that.
I'll figure out who that was and post it in the links below the podcast. Yeah. So, and that is actually something that I have to say is amazing about menopause. I do not. I've heard people say like, well, don't you miss your period? I'm like, what? No. Why? Why would I? I had like the worst cramps. Right. All, my whole life, the worst cramps. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, you're having accidents. I don't know. I know I don't miss it one bit. So yes.
No, it's a roller coaster that women experience all through their reproductive years. It's a constant change in the estrogen and progesterone levels. I mean, it's a miracle that we're able to grow a human being inside of our bodies. And so I'm grateful for that. Yeah. But that roller coaster is not easy on many women. And so once you go through menopause, there is no more roller coaster. You're flatlined. So now you can be flatlined with zero hormones, and some women do fine without them, mm-hmm. or you can be on a nice, steady, low dose of estrogen and when you need it, progesterone. And it's stable. It's steady. Every day is the same. It's this nice, even mm-hmm. keel. You know, there aren't these ups and downs. And one other point I want to just make just while I thought about it is that, you know, when we give hormone therapy, we're not replacing exactly the same amount that you have during the reproductive years. It's just a whisper. It's just a whisper of estrogen, enough to have those preventative effects and quality of life effects I talked about. But it's definitely not the same amount that you got during the reproductive years. And one other point I just wanted to make is that men have estradiol levels in their bodies, estrogen in their bodies. And when women go through menopause, they end up with less estrogen than their male counterparts have. And so when we give hormone therapy, we are only giving them about as much estrogen as a male human has. Is that not crazy? We're just trying to match what men have.
That is really weird and funny. Yeah, I did not know that. That is so interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
So before I found out about CureMD and spoke to you for my appointment, I had spoken to my doctor about menopause treatment, and she prescribed antidepressants, which I thought was very strange. But she said that there's at least one study that shows that antidepressants can reduce hot flashes as much as HRT. So I'm curious, do you know anything about that? And do you see antidepressants as a viable option?
I do. I do think they're a viable option. So venlafaxine, Effexor, is one of the very best serotonin, norepinephrine antidepressants that we can use for treating vasomotor symptoms, hot flashes and night sweats. There are several other in the same class, but the venlafaxine has the most data behind it. And yes, it does work for about 30% of women. And so it is a viable option. And so any woman who chooses not to use hormone therapy or can't use it because of a contraindication, it's a fantastic option. And we offer it through our service as well. And so, yes, I'm grateful that we have that option for women who can't or won't take hormone therapy for those symptoms. Now, it does not offer the benefit of preventing heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, and bone loss, but it does help with mood, and it helps with those vasomotor symptoms. So, yes, it's absolutely a reasonable option.
Got it. Okay. And so, well, I chose not to take it. I just decided to wait.
Yeah.
So I can't say what my experience would have been with it, but I'm going to stick with the HRT for now.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those contraindications for taking HRT?
So any woman who has a history of certain kinds of cancer, any woman who has known active coronary artery disease, cardiovascular disease, and any woman who has had a blood clot. Also, if they have active liver disease. So those are some of the, it's not an extensive list, but those are some of the biggest contraindications to using hormone therapy.
So it seems like it's a pretty good option for a lot of women, really. Do you find that there's any way that works really well to convince them that it's safe?
I believe that, you know, every patient has to own their decision. I believe that doctors are here, practitioner healthcare providers are, we're here to help guide patients, but each patient needs to own her decision. And so, you know, we help with the education process, with, you know, trying to explain the risks and the benefits as well as we can. But sometimes that fear, like as I said, that lives so deep in our brains, is so strong that they can't get past it. And that's okay. you know, each person is her own, and we, there's, you know, some people are going to have a fixed belief that we're just not going to be able to change, but we're here to at least offer guidance and offer that information for women who are open to it. And then we offer it to women, and we offer them hormonal options. We offer them non-hormonal options. We talk about dressing in layers. We talk about a cooling pillow. We talk about having these little portable fans available. There are lots of things that you can do to get through kind of the hard time of menopause, the hard vasomotor symptoms. But each woman gets to decide. We're just here because we don't think that the full truth has been offered to enough women. And even when they know the truth of the options and they know the risks and the benefits and are opting for all the benefits of estrogen therapy, they can't find anyone to prescribe it. And so that's where our telemedicine clinic comes in. We're here not only to offer the education, but also to offer the prescription when it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. If you go to your doctor and say, can I please have HRT? I imagine that sometimes they just might decline to prescribe it.
Yeah. You know, there's a large health system here in California where that I think provides excellent medical care, except when it comes to menopause. Mm. And I have gotten so many patients from this healthcare system who just have gone to their physicians and asked for help, and, you know, they're just not getting it. They are being told, don't worry, this will pass, or One woman was told she should drink more water and drink more Metamucil, which is for constipation. I don't know why you would recommend that for menopause, but that's what she was told. I know. I mean, I think if you look at the big picture, there's three really big barriers to women getting the proper menopause care in the United States, and it makes them really hard for them to get the help with their symptoms. So first is the stigma. You know, menopause is just seen as an unfortunate woman's problem, which we're just supposed to suffer in silence. Meanwhile, ads for erectile dysfunction run during the Super Bowl. We can't get any press for what happens with a woman's body.
Oh my God, that's such a good point.
Yes, yes. Number two is a lack of information. You know, physicians just aren't given this training. In the United States, there are 500,000 primary care doctors. There are 50,000 OBGYNs, and there are only 3,000 certified menopause practitioners. Wow. And we have 36 million women experiencing perimenopausal and menopausal symptoms right now, and we only have 3,000 certified menopause practitioners. So there's just a lack of information. And then the third thing is the misinformation. Mm-hmm. So with the Women's Health Initiative that we talked about briefly before, there's just this skewed public perception against hormone therapy that's led to decades of confusion and misinformation, and it's continuing to keep millions of women from accessing the care that they need. You know, they don't either know to ask, they're afraid to ask, or their practitioners haven't kept up with what the latest thinking is. You know, it's a moving target. The North American Menopause Society put out a position statement in 2017, which is what we follow here at CureMD to a T, because it was researchers who had spent the time pouring through the information to come up with what the guidelines should be. And they spelled out in detail what the risks are, what the benefits are. And if a physician has not read that position statement, then he or she is no longer up to date. They just don't have the latest information. And so it's really hard for physicians to keep up with everything. We are living in the information age. There is information thrown at us all the time, and we're trying to keep up as much as we can. And if it's not your specialty, you're not going to keep up.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about is diet. How important is diet and what we're eating when we're dealing with menopause symptoms?
Okay, so it's really important for women to know that the attention to detail with exercise and diet during the menopause transition is so, so crucial. I have so many women who say, you know, I'm doing the same thing I've always done, and now I'm gaining weight. And the answer is, if you're doing the same thing you've always done, it's not going to be enough. We cannot get away with what we got away with at 35 anymore. So it's incredibly important for women to know that they really do need to try to exercise for a full hour every single day. There is a fantastic, I know that's hard, but it works. It works. There's a study called the National Weight Control Registry, and this is a study of 10,000 people who have lost significant amounts of weight and they've kept it off. So lots of people lose weight, but very few people actually keep it off. And this group of people has. And so this, in this study, they're trying to figure out what actually works to keep weight off. And in this group, 90% of the participants exercise for that full hour every single day. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you use calorie reduction to lose weight, and you use exercise to keep it off. So exercise is absolutely crucial. I do try to recommend intermittent fasting, which just means you want to fast for as many hours of the day as possible. So a minimum of 12 hours. So if you finish dinner at 7 p.m., make sure that you don't eat anything again until 7 a.m. Water is fine, but no calories whatsoever between 7 and 7. Now, if you can extend that to 13 hours or 14 hours, even up to 16 hours, even better. Not everyone can do that, and that's okay. But just the more hours of the day that you give your gut a break, the better you can do with diet. I also tell women, do not eat corn or potatoes. Now, I accidentally said this I said this to a woman in the corn industry, and I thought I was going to fall over. She did not hang up the phone, though. She just accepted it.
Oh, my goodness.
And the reason is corn and potatoes cause a rise in blood sugar. They have an extremely high glycemic index. And so it's just really easy to cut out those two food items, unless you're starving. Now, if you're starving, or I always point out the movie The Martian, how he lived for, I think, 3 years on potatoes. If that's the only food you have, fine, eat a potato.
Right. You're in space.
It's packed with calories. But you don't need anything packed with calories. We live in the United States where food is abundant. We need less food. So no corn, no potatoes. Do not drink your calories if at all possible. Mm-hmm. You should never consume any calorie in a drink. And I even mean smoothies. I know the smoothie people don't like me when I say that. But I think you need to chew your food. I think you need food that was made by nature. Again, if you can pronounce it, you can eat it. So I think if you just take, and then sugar, of course, we know sugar is horrible for us. So it's hard to give that up, but do your best. So I just think if women can take some of those concepts and really hone in on those and just make sure it is, it's an everyday endeavor. I'm not going to call it a battle, but it's an everyday endeavor to maintain that weight. And so we all just do the best we can.
Okay. And one other very quick follow-up. As far as exercise, is there a difference between like very high impact, not impact, but getting your heart rate very high, or is walking better when you're in this phase of your life, or is just anything great?
Okay. So if you do not have an hour, you can do high intensity interval training for about 30 minutes, and you need to sweat. If that's the only amount of time you have, it's got to be really high intensity interval training for 30 minutes. But the cheapest, easiest, safest way to get your exercise in is a brisk walk, a full hour. And what I do is I walk 30 minutes away from my house. And after 30 minutes, I'm kind of over it and I really don't want to be walking anymore. I feel like I need to get back to my to-do list. But I'm 30 minutes away from my house, so I have to walk 30 minutes back. So I'm stuck.
Right, you have no choice. That is a great idea.
Yep. Yeah. So you can do anything for 30 minutes, but then if you're 30 minutes away from your house, you got to go back and you need to be breathing heavy. You need to be walking hard. It's not a dilly-dally, smelling the roses kind of walk. You need to be getting your heart rate up, sweating a little bit. Yes. So I think the high intensity interval training for 30 minutes or a full hour walk is really got to be part of everyone's, you know, daily activity. And they should be listening to your podcast while they're on this walk.
Yes, they should. Thank you so much for saying that. Yes. Listen to the Mean Show. Take your walk and your day will be better. Yes.
All problems are solved then.
Yes. Something else I wanted to ask you about is I'm wondering about the term bioidentical hormones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So I had been to my dermatologist, and he told me that a friend of his, another physician, was going to move into his office. He talked about bioidentical hormones. It was going to be something that he'd be prescribing. And I don't know if it was just my perception, but I felt like it had a bit of a like alternative medicine feel to it. And I was kind of like, I wonder what that's all about. So I'm wondering, I think maybe there might be a perception like that that pervades a little bit. So I'm wondering if you can just describe what exactly is bioidentical medicine and just clear it up for us.
Okay, that is a fantastic question. I'm so glad you asked because there is so much confusion about this. So first of all, bioidentical means that the hormone mimics exactly what your ovaries used to produce during the reproductive years. So it mimics the exact same estradiol and progesterone that our bodies naturally produce during reproductive years. There's a term called compounded hormones, which sometimes gets confused with bioidentical. Compounded means the hormone was prepared in a small pharmacy, sometimes designed specifically for your body, but usually they're just formulations that, you know, physicians can choose from. But they're prepared on a, you know, weekly basis. And the only problem with compounded pharmacies and compounded prescriptions is that when they've been studied, it has been found that there is fairly significant batch-to-batch variability. Mm. And so the concern is that, you know, we don't know exactly what you're getting when you use a compounded pharmacy. Now, don't get me wrong, I do prescribe compounded medications when necessary. I absolutely do. I love that that's an option. I just don't think that it's considered to be the first choice. And when you look at what the North American Menopause Society states, they definitely recommend that we use FDA-approved medications first. Now, 10 years ago, we didn't have access to bioidentical estrogen and progestin. And so we only had synthetic hormones available. But we now have FDA-approved bioidentical formulations, which are available in pills, patches, gels, and even a spray at this point. So it's so wonderful that we have access to medications, hormones, which are very well regulated, very well monitored, and very well studied in very large scale trials, which we know arrive in the same dose. You know, it's extremely monitored and regulated. And so we now have that option in an FDA approved formulation. And if I, for some reason, can't find something that works for a woman through an FDA pharmacy, then I use a compounded pharmacy. Like one example I'll give you is that Prometrium, the bioidentical progesterone that the FDA has approved, is formulated in peanut oil. And so for women who are really allergic to peanuts, we do have to have their progesterone compounded in a compounding pharmacy. And so that's one example of a very good reason to use a compounding pharmacy. And so, yes, it does have that kind of holistic and naturopathic type feel. And that's, you know, there's a demand for natural in everything that we do right now. You know, I tell patients all the time, you know, if you can pronounce it, if nature made it, you can eat it. If you're buying something from the center of the supermarket that has words that you can't even pronounce on the ingredient list, you probably shouldn't be eating that. So, you know, this demand for natural, you know, nature-made goodness is coming across even in our practice of medicine. So, and I do think it's based in some logic. I do prescribe medicines that many people cannot pronounce that I actually do believe have lots of benefits, lots of life-saving benefits. But, you know, when we have the option for something that mimics what the body used to produce, what nature made, you know, why wouldn't we try that?
Right. And so what are they made out of?
They're plant-based. It's derived from yams.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is so amazing. I was worried to ask that question because I thought you were going to maybe say some kind of animal or something that, and then I'd be like, oh my gosh. But that is really cool.
I'm so glad you asked.
Yeah, I'm so glad I asked you. I was so afraid of it. Great news. And then also something that I was nervous about when I, you know, made an appointment with you. I was like, how much is this going to cost? I didn't even sort of look into that. But it's actually, CurieMD seems very affordable. Could you talk about that? I think that people should know about that.
Yes. We really want women to be able to access this in an affordable way. So the first visit with your healthcare provider through CurieMD, so it's curiemd.com, is complimentary. There's no fee to speak to us. And then any visit after that first one, and in the first one, I had someone ask me this other day, they said, you know, do we actually do anything in this first visit? And yes, absolutely. If you're an appropriate candidate and you've had the proper mammograms and blood work done ahead of time, which usually has been done by your regular physician, yes, we can prescribe for you that day. And then any visits after that are $39 for up to 20 minutes. And then our prescriptions start at $33 a month. Our prescriptions are mailed to patients from a national mail order pharmacy in a 3-month supply. So they arrive at your door within 4 to 5 days. And then we ask patients to come back and do a follow-up visit with us about 3 months later. They can book appointments at any time if they have questions or concerns, but we ask them to come back at the 3-month mark. We try to make sure at that point we have a copy of each patient's mammogram and her blood work. We just ask that you have a regular, kind of a standard panel, which includes thyroid, cholesterol, a complete metabolic panel, which has your kidneys and your liver tests on it, and a complete blood count, which most women have had. We just ask that we have those tests available for us at that 3-month visit. And then if we're happy with the dose, we can prescribe for the next year, and then we meet annually. If you're not happy with the dose, we can change it up and meet again in another 3 months. So we try to mimic what we do in a standard in-person visit, minus the exam, of course. We can't do a physical exam over the phone or over video. But we try to mimic what happens in an in-person visit as much as possible, because we really do want to practice the highest standard of care. And that's a really important. I do want to say that we of course can't provide all care for women. We can't do your breast exams. We can't do your pap smears and your physical exams. So we are an adjunct to what you're already getting from your primary care practitioner. But we are very happy and able to provide that expert menopause knowledge that I think is hard to find.
Leslie, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. This has been so extremely informative and helpful, and I'm so excited about this service. Just thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm so excited to hear how much better you're sleeping. It takes a little while for it to get into your system and fully work, but I tell people I love sleep more than chocolate. And so if I can get you to sleep through the night, I will have succeeded.
I will let you know for sure. I already feel a little bit of improvement, so I'm just good. I'm excited for what the future holds.
That's fantastic. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to your listeners and let them know about our service and hopefully educate them a little bit about what they need to know about this important transition in life. And I hope that between the two of us, we can inspire them that it's the second half of life really can be a time of feeling great, of celebrating all the wisdom that we've gained, and just deciding, you know, what the next half of our life is going to be about.
Absolutely. I mean, thank you so much. That's all the stuff that I am so excited to spread the word about. So I just can't thank you enough for stating it better than I can and and for taking the time to be a guest.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your weekend.
You too. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to The Mean Podcast. Please check out the online magazine at www.meanmagazine.com and get in touch if you or someone you know should be featured in the magazine or on the podcast.